Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome John Burnett to the podcast. Welcome, John.
Hi, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. Thanks for joining us today.
Good.
So, John, you are an application specialist with Fluke. You also have your CMRP. What else do we want? Should people know about you before we dive into our topic today?
James, I started, some almost 30 years ago now, where I started off in the U.S. Navy. I was an electrician in the Navy, and for 12 years, I worked in nuclear power plants and operated and maintained nuclear power plants for the Navy. And the last 3 years on an aircraft carrier, I learned how to use vibration analysis to monitor the rotating machines in the engine room of a carrier. And then I went to work for a vibration company that helped build reliability programs for customers, and then moved on to Fluke, where I do something the same. So I've kind of watched over the years, I've worked with companies as they've gone from reactive maintenance to planned maintenance to condition-based maintenance.
Excellent. So a wide-ranging career, started off in the Navy, which seems to be a common theme in maintenance and reliability.
Yes.
So at one point you moved towards vibration. How long have you been involved with vibration analysis?
So let's see. I guess it's been about 27 or 28 years now, because it was in the late 80s that I started working with in vibration analysis.
All right, excellent. So a tremendous wealth of experience in vibration analysis, vibration monitoring. But for those that might not be familiar, what is vibration monitoring?
So we're not using the vibration to reduce vibration, or even to really, see whether, what is the vibration level, because all machines vibrate. But what we're doing is we're using vibration analysis as a way to diagnose machine faults. So if you think about it, every machine vibrates, but looking at the patterns and looking at the amount of vibration and comparing it to what a healthy machine looks like, we can use it as a diagnostic tool.
All right, excellent. So we're using it as a diagnostic tool, monitoring the levels of vibration to tell us when there's something going on with the equipment, so mm-hmm. we can investigate and restore that or eliminate that defect.
That's right.
Perfect. Now, vibration monitoring is used in all kinds of different applications, but I want to discuss it specifically on detecting motor faults. How effective is vibration for detecting motor faults?
Oh, it's great. And keep in mind that when you look at faults with motors, there's electrical faults and there's mechanical faults. And so we kind of need to differentiate, because vibration analysis is very good for looking at the rotating motion of the mechanical rotating component. So if you think about a motor, it has a rotating shaft with bearings, the same as a pump or a fan or a compressor or a blower. So even though vibration analysis can give us some indication and give us some screening of some of the electrical faults, we really want to use electrical tools to diagnose electrical motor faults. But we're going to use vibration analysis to screen and diagnose the mechanical faults from the motor.
All right. So when we talk about detecting motor faults or monitoring for motor faults, we're really talking about, like you said, those mechanical components, the bearings, shafts, stuff like that. We're not looking at you know, rotor bars and a variety of other things like that, correct?
That's exactly right. So even though we can see some of those indications and we can screen for those, we really need to bring an electrical tool. So for the mechanical components, the same as any rotating shaft with bearings, we're really looking for imbalance, misalignment, looseness, and bearing faults.
All right, so that was my next question. So what are those top faults that we can detect? And you said imbalance, vibration, bearing defects. What else was there?
Misalignment and looseness.
All right, perfect. So what is imbalance?
So imbalance, there's actually a mechanical imbalance and there's an electrical imbalance. And so if you think about it, you can have a electrical phase imbalance. And so that's what your electrical tool would be looking for. We also have a mechanical imbalance, which is the imbalance of the shaft. And so if you've got a heavy spot, and just think of it like an imbalance in your wheel and tire on your car, when there's a heavy spot, it's going to make a thump thump. And we need to find out and minimize the amount of imbalance, because imbalance is going to cause rapid wear in our machine, in both the components on the machine and the bearings and the seals on the machine.
All right. Excellent. Now, most people are probably well aware of what misalignment is, but what about looseness? What is looseness exactly?
So looseness can be from a couple of different faults or causes. So we can have rotating looseness and non-rotating looseness. So what we mean by that is it could be looseness that's related to the shaft or something on the shaft, so that when the rotating components are turning, there's something loose. We can also have non-rotating looseness. So if you think of maybe like a bolt that's holding down the motor feet or something, if that becomes loose, it's not part of the rotating component, it's a part of the structure. But yet, because the shaft is rotating and making vibration, it's making the foundation bounce up and down as well. So we can get looseness from rotating components and also a looseness from non-rotating components.
All right, excellent. And lastly, what are some of those bearing defects that vibration can pick up on?
Okay, yeah, that's a good question. So the bearings, and if you ask people what their main faults are, they're going to say their main faults with motors are motor electrical failures and then bearing failures. And really what we found out over the years is the bearing failures are really coming from other causes. And so most bearing failures, can be, from different sources. They can be from lubrication. You could have bad lubrication. You could have improper lubrication. You could have dirty oil or grease or not enough oil or grease. But the more common is actually from either imbalance or misalignment. So studies have shown that 50% of bearing wear comes and seal wear comes directly from misalignment. And so over the years, and I remember this very well when I was in the Navy, that we would just eyeball misalignment being an electrician, we'd replace the bearings in the motor, and the mechanics replace the bearings in the pump, and then we'd slap it together, and then a few months later, we're replacing the bearings again, and it was because we weren't doing the alignment. We were we thought it was difficult, and we would skip that step, and even just a little bit of misalignment and a little bit of imbalance can cause rapid wear in your bearings and seals. And so that's really where most bearings and seal problems come from, is from people ignoring the misalignment and or imbalance.
So if we make sure our equipment is balanced and we install it properly. So we go in, we have the correct tolerances for angular and axial alignment standards. Mm-hmm. We put those, we install the equipment to those standards. Mm-hmm. We'll eliminate a lot of the bearing defects that we find.
Exactly right. And so it's almost like which comes first, the chicken or the egg. And a lot of people say, well, you know, should I fix the misalignment? You know, should I just go around my machines and fix misalignment, or should I wait until I tear the machine apart to replace the bearings and new misalignment? It doesn't really matter. And so, you know, you can either go out and, you know, on a schedule, take down each of your machines and do a precision alignment and do a precision balance, or you can just wait until the next time that the bearings wear and you got to take the machine down anyway. And so what we've been telling people is that if you take a machine down because the bearings or the seals are bad, don't just replace the bearings and seals and slap it back together without taking a look. And even if you have just a moderate or even maybe a low serious misalignment or imbalance, and you don't think it's that bad to worry about, that's still going to wear out your bearings and seals much, much faster. And so we need to spend a little bit of time in getting those things cleaned up.
Yeah, absolutely. What is the saying? An ounce of prevention prevents a pound of cure.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And it really doesn't take that long to align machines. It's just that, you know, with the tools that we had 25, 30 years ago, we all know that aligning and balancing machines was laborsome and took a lot of time. And now with some of the tools that we have available to technicians nowadays, there's no excuse not to precision align every machine, not just the top five or six machines in your plant.
Yeah, exactly. We're moving from the reverse dial indicator method and other methods like that, although effective, very time consuming.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Exactly right. And years ago, you know, we would have millwrights and others that were specialists in this in doing reverse dial. But the downside of reverse dial is that it takes a lot of time because there's so many math errors and so many things that can go wrong that it means you've got to do the alignment job three or four times to make sure your math all works out. And the other problem is a lot of these millwrights and specialists are retiring, and we just don't have that expertise in our plants anymore. So we've got to find more automated, easy, you know, more smart tools that can help us do this. We don't need to have these laborsome, you know, long time, you know, there's nothing wrong with reverse dials. You're exactly right. It's just that we just don't have the time for that anymore. We got to keep a plant up and running. So we've got to do things quicker.
Yep, absolutely. Now, to detect all these things using vibration, we obviously need sensors. Mm-hmm. Now, how many do we require to monitor an individual motor?
That's a good question. So there's a little bit of a difference in monitoring in terminology in that. And so to answer your question fully, let's talk about, there's really two different ways that we can monitor the bearings of a machine using vibration. One would be just to screen to kind of tell us whether there's a problem, and the other would be to diagnose or analyze. And so if we were to diagnose and analyze, we would need to collect data from all three directions of movement, up and down, side to side, and end to end on every bearing of the machine. The problem is, you know, that takes a lot of time, and it takes a more complicated or a more advanced tool, and quite often isn't really necessary when you think about, we could screen with a fraction of the time and resources and much, much simpler. So a screening sensor would screen the vibration in just one direction and could quickly tell us whether it was good or bad. So if you think about it, like when you go see the nurse before you go see the doctor, the nurse is going to use a simple test that takes a couple of seconds and check your blood pressure, pulse, and temperature, where if you go see the doctor who's going to take an EKG, it could take, you know, 20, 30 minutes to run the test. And so there's really two different types of tests or monitoring we can do on a bearing of a motor. One is to screen, which would take seconds and tell us basically the motor is good or bad. And then diagnosis, which would take maybe 10 or 15 minutes for us to be able to read a vibration EKG on the machine and tell us what the fault is and how bad the fault is and what to do to fix it.
All right. So we can use something called screening, which will allow us to screen out the equipment that is operating properly and just identify those ones that are acting out. Mm-hmm. From there, we move it to a monitoring or to an analysis platform mm-hmm. where we do that deep dive to understand what's going on so we can troubleshoot it, root cause it, and eliminate it.
That's right. Because if you think about it, just like in the medical industry, we have limited number of specialists. We have limited time. We can't spend our time analyzing healthy machines. And so the same idea that a nurse would do is let's screen out using simple tools, and first of all, eliminate the 80% of machines that are healthy, because we don't want to analyze or diagnose machines that are healthy, and then and we can do that with much simpler tools.
All right. So, where have you seen this type of program implemented? Because this is something that I'm not going to is newer to me, I guess, is the best way to put
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we've been using these tools for years in a lot of different industries, but because of the technology wasn't advanced, and because wireless and if you think about it, what's really made a big jump in the vibration world has been the communication explosion that we've seen the last few years, where everybody is walking around with a computer in their pocket and in their phone, and that's talking to everybody else's computer all over the world. And so, you know, we should just get on the bandwagon of that, because now that communication explosion means that we can now start monitoring our machines, you know, wirelessly in near real time. And let's use what's already out there in this technology boom that we've had to be able to start getting information from our machines.
Excellent. A special thank you to Fluke for sponsoring this episode. To find out more about Fluke's offerings for vibration screening and vibration analysis sensoring, or how they can help you improve reliability, please visit ascendoreliability.com/go/fluke or click that link in the show notes. Now, what type of sensor are we going to use for that?
So for vibration, we use something that's called an accelerometer. So it's measuring acceleration. And for years, we've been using a crystal. And so the crystal works great for a portable walk-around sensor. But, the cost can be prohibitive. So as the technology gets better and, you know, all of us, carrying around our cell phone, there are accelerometers inside our cell phone. But those accelerometers aren't crystals. We're using MEMS, which is an electronic accelerometer. And so why don't we use some of that technology to our advantage, monitoring real time on our machines? So you'll see a lot of these MEMS type accelerometers or electronic accelerometers taking the place of some of these very high end crystal accelerometers, and bringing the cost down so that now we can afford to put these sensors on all of our machines, not just on a few. For example, for years we've been monitoring the big, the main turbine and the boiler feed pumps, but it just isn't cost effective to do all the machines in the plant. Well, now that the cost is coming down and these MEMS sensors are everywhere, now we can monitor all the machines in the plant.
Excellent. And Fluke has a sensor, I believe, that does just that, the 5361, if I remember correctly.
3561.
3561. Yes. Okay.
Now that was close. I don't know. If we have so many numbers. I can't keep it straight myself. So I don't know how you were even close. But but yeah, 3561 is a triaxial MEMS accelerometer, in that it's measuring the overall vibration in three directions on the bearing of a machine, and basically gives us the information we need to know. Is that machine good or is that machine bad? And do we need to do some further testing? So it basically, just think of it as, you know, sitting out there on the machine, on the motor and the pump, and it it's going along happily. And then when it sees a problem, it waves its little hand at us and says, hey, there's something wrong. You need to come check me out.
All right. So that is a screening sensor then that would flag us to go grab the expensive unit to go out there, do the deep analysis and figure out what's going on.
That's exactly right. Because if you think about it, the first step of any type of a proactive program is to first find out where are problem machines. And if we have hundreds or even thousands of machines, the first thing we've got to do is find out where our problems are, because we have limited resources and we don't want to send out our technicians if there's nothing wrong with the machine. So that's exactly right.
All right, perfect. Now, what type of analysis or intelligence is included in this sensor? You said it gives us that warning, but what is the sensor doing internally for analysis and intelligence?
So what it's doing is it's doing something called overall vibration. And this has been something that's been a standard for over 30 years. And so we've been monitoring machines for 30 years using ISO standards of 10 to 1,000 hertz, which you know, that is the speed of that we've identified as being most of the problems with a rotating machine are going to happen between that 10 to 1,000 hertz. And so if we can quickly look at that, then we can know, hey, is the vibration good or bad? But the problem is, if you just take that measurement and you know, take and trend that number over time, you know, different machines are going to have different overall vibration levels. And so if you think about the similarity, the same as back when the nurse takes your blood pressure, when the nurse takes a blood pressure and it's 120 over 70, you know, the first question you ask is that good or is that bad? And because the nurse has some history or experience and some knowledge, they know that a 50-year-old male in good health at 120 over 70 is good. And so that's what we do in the vibration screening world for machines as well, is that we know what good overall vibration is for different types of pumps and fans and compressors and blowers, because a vibration level may be high on a compressor, but it might be okay for a pump. So we don't want to just trend the overall vibration. We want to be able to take that trend, compare it to machines of the same type, and that way we've got a little bit of intelligence. We have a database of what's good and bad for our machines.
Excellent. So we have that built-in intelligence that's going to tell us if it's good, if it's starting to get bad, or if it's bad, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Excellent. Now, that sensor obviously has, you know, red or red, yellow, green, or green, yellow, red, something of that nature. But does the technician have to go out and look at that, or is this linked to some sort of cloud software or so on and so forth?
That's a good idea. Yeah. So it is going to be throwing out numbers at you, but just watching those numbers isn't going to tell us anything. We've got to have some alarms. We've got to have some notifications. So you're right. Those numbers are going to be, and along with the severity of the machine, green, yellow, orange, or red, are going to be sent to a cloud-based system. But the real power of, and you can watch the trends, but all of us have plenty of things that we need to be doing, and we just don't have the time to be looking at trends because if you've got thousands of machines sending you numbers, you don't have the time to look at all these numbers. So what we're going to be looking for is the thresholds of when this machine goes from good to bad. And, you know, as it goes from green to yellow to orange to red, we want to know that. And so what you're going to be you're going to get notified when it goes from one machine state to another. And then you'll get some type of a message that'll say, hey, look, machine 101, was good. And now it's in an alarm condition. And we need you to go take a look at it.
All right, excellent. And that cloud software, that is, what is Fluke's terminology, Excelix?
Yes and no. It's called Fluke Connect, and Excelix is kind of the way that we integrate or bring all of these programs together. So part of the Excelix is sharing information from the Fluke Connect tools, which is all of our portable and our remote tools, and along with sharing that with CMMS systems, computerized maintenance management systems, sharing this with other programs, so that it's the information sharing of getting the right information, getting the right answers to the right person, so that somebody can make a decision and not just having that information on a spreadsheet or in a chart and put in a folder and put in a desk drawer somewhere.
All right, perfect. So with Fluke Connect, with Excelix, what we can do is when those sensors trigger an alarm, it can automatically create a corrective work order in eMaint.
That's right. So eMaint is a computerized maintenance management system, and the Excelix links with other CMMS systems as well. But you're exactly right. What you want to have this do is, you know, you see an alarm, it waves a flag, it sends a message, and then generates a work order. And the work order could be as simple as, hey, somebody go take a look at this. Or it could be saying, hey, it's time to generate a work order to take to go out and take a look at this machine. And then once the technician goes and takes a look at the machine and does some further analysis, then that may generate a second work order. Would be, hey, now it's time to go do some corrective action. So, but we don't want to do a corrective action until somebody has double checked it to make sure there really is a need for that repair.
Yes, absolutely. Now, what do you think is the one thing that makes the biggest difference in being successful in this type of program where we have the screening, the analysis? What is that one thing?
You know, I think, and we may have already talked about it, but I think it's getting answers from your data, and then having being able to make the decision that because just having a bunch of numbers coming in, I've seen a lot of programs fail because you just have a bunch of numbers, or you have the wrong information, and so There's a couple of things that I tell customers to do. Step one is to make sure you're getting good answers, you're getting good data, and you're getting the right kind of information and sharing it with the people that can act on it. And the second part is as you grow a program, make sure that you start small and grow, because the last thing you want to do is try to implement a new program and have it be so big that you spend months setting it up and you never get it set up. And then the third part is make sure you use the right tool for the right application, which means that, it might mean that, what's the old saying? If all you had was a hammer, then everything looks like a nail. So we need to make sure that, like, for example, on the motor example, if you just used a thermal camera, for example, it might tell you there's something wrong with that motor, but you might also need vibration to tell you that it's either that it's mechanical and what the mechanical fault is, and also electrical, because there's going to be electrical faults too. So if you think about it, in a motor, there's really three different types of tools. There's tools that check the thermal image, there's tools that check mechanical with vibration, and there's tools that check electrical, because any one of those could be our root cause, and just having one may not be enough to be able to diagnose a fault.
Yeah, those were three great things that people need to think about when they're implementing these programs. You know, start with that pilot area. Prove out the technology, prove out the concept, prove out your ability to manage everything before you grow it, right? Making sure you have those wide ranges of tools to help you.
Yep.
You know, all very, very good things that we need to think about.
Good.
Now, if we had a magic wand, what would be the one thing you would change in a typical vibration program that you see out there today?
I think that a lot of these programs are so advanced that they are overlooking. So in other words, if all you had was a high-end vibration analyzer, it means that when you start from the top, you only do the top 4 or 5% of your machines, and you just don't have the time to do the rest of the machines. So I think the biggest thing that we run into is that we have critical shortage of resources, and if we have too advanced or too much of expert tools, we only do the top few machines. So I would say that the first the biggest impact we could do is try to kind of spread out and to use more screening tools to be able to find out where, you know, to find out more problems in your plant, because quite often we're only doing the top 4 or 5 machines while the rest of the machines in the plant are failing. And that's what's keeping the maintenance teams running around in circles, isn't the 4 or 5 machines that a vibration expert are babysitting. It's the hundreds of other machines that are failing all around the plant.
Yes, absolutely. There's all those things that are keeping them busy. But by utilizing that screening approach, we can minimize the noise and make sure we're dealing with a lot of those issues to free up time so we can be more proactive.
Exactly.
Excellent. Well, John, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about vibration and the various techniques and technologies out there, such as, you know, screening and the 3561. But before we go, where can people find out more about you? What about Fluke? Are there any events, activities that you or Fluke will be at in the near future?
Oh, yeah. So we do have, we are going to be at the CBM show in Orlando this week. We have our Accelerate show that's also going to be in Florida this week. And then next month, December 10th through the 12th, we're going to be at the International Maintenance Conference that's also in Florida as well. So we've got several trade shows that we're going to be at. And then you can always, you know, reach out to us at fluke.com and find out who we can talk to you and have a local sales engineer come visit or talk to one of our people on the phone.
Excellent. I will make sure to put links to all those show notes. I myself will be at Accelerate. I'll be leaving tomorrow morning for that. So presenting a paper on the Wednesday. So it should be a fun time.
Oh, good. Good. All right.
Well, John, thanks again for taking the time to share your knowledge with us today on this topic. Hopefully it provides some awareness and some ideas for those trying to manage or implement a vibration program where they're kind of overwhelmed. I think the screening process will definitely help to reduce that initial workload, it reduce that scariness of the project.
All right. Thanks, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.